hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
How are you this fine day, Jeff?
Good. How are you doing today?
I can't complain, except that I can complain because now the holidays are all over and it's finally back to the real world, and I don't know that I like that so much.
I don't think I like what's coming tomorrow.
No. For those of you not in the horrible Midwest, we are anticipating our first significant winter storm, which means that all of the crazies are going to be out, and I dread that first decent snow. And we're not even talking about, we're not going to get like 2 feet of snow here. We're talking like 4 inches, maybe 7 inches in spots.
And crazy people, I'm telling you.
I've already seen the posts on Facebook, people buying their emergency French toast kits, cleaning out the bread and eggs and milk. And I don't understand that. We had a huge storm here almost exactly this time last year. And I remember going to Meijer and taking a picture of the bread aisle. I had never seen it in person before. There was not one single loaf of white bread anywhere in the store. People were fighting over white bread. I didn't think that was a real thing, but it is a fact.
People
a real
are
thing.
Crazy.
I don't understand it. Well, so we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about to keep you warm. How's that for a segue?
There you go.
All right. The first thing, I want to remind everybody, we have our call-in line. So if you have a question or you want to make a comment about something you've heard on the show, please feel free to give us a call on your dime, not ours. 317-643-1212. You can call. You don't even have to talk to us. Like if you're worried about, oh, I might have to interact with people. Nope, it goes straight to voicemail. You can record what you've got to say. You can yell at us. You can praise us. You can ask a question. You can leave a comment. And we will never actually talk to you unless we like what you have to say. And then we'll call you back and maybe bring you on the show. But dial that number. Leave us a message. 317-643-1212. What do we have to talk about today, Jeff?
Well, I think we have quite a few things. Let's get started. You know, we had CES starts this week.
Yes.
And with CES comes the same thing that's come for the last 3 years at CES. Let's talk about the connected home.
Well, you know, this is interesting because this isn't just a CES topic. We actually had a user write in and ask us to talk a little bit about the connected home. So it kind of just is a happy coincidence that it's going on, that CES is going on right now. And I'm sure that there will be a bazillion and two things that are released this time around that that talk about, you know, making the Internet of Things and the connected home. I have a little personal experience with the connected home because I have been an X10 user for a long, long time. For those of you who don't know, X10 is a home automation system that dates way back to 1975. It doesn't work really well, and it has a very low, what I will call a wife acceptance factor, the WAF, because, if the system gets out of whack and the remotes are out of sync with the switches and the lamps, then it is just a huge pain in the neck because then you have to go around and reset everything and make sure that your switches are all on and your lights are all on, and then you can use your remotes to control things. When it works, it's really slick, but when it doesn't, or you have somebody who is easily frustrated by such fragile systems, it does not make for a happy set of homemates. I will tell you that.
Well, let me talk a little bit about what we have here,
sure,
which is part of our home security system.
Okay.
That's through Xfinity/Comcast, and we have a base unit. We have a couple of light sockets that are controlled. We have two thermostats, a couple cameras, and it works really well for what it does, but there's not a lot of expandability because Comcast, of course, locks it down. And even though it's a Z-Wave system, the base unit doesn't recognize new items unless they've been added in the Comcast approved device area.
Yeah, and good luck getting them to approve anything.
Exactly. So there are things that I don't have. I don't have the garage door opener. I don't have the front door lock. There's some other things like that that I would like to have, but just isn't in the cards right now, at least with Comcast.
Yeah. So maybe we should talk just a second about some of the different standards of the main home automation players that are out there. If you've not really looked into it, you may not even know what your options are. And there's everything from sort of rebranded. There's really basically like four or five main standards. And then everything is really one of those that's repackaged. Primarily Z-Wave. That's the big one that really seems to be rebranded a lot. But, you know, the big ones are X10, which, like I said, it's been around forever and it works, but it's not the best. If you are starting from scratch, I don't know that I would recommend jumping in with X10. And I only say that because I have experience with the products. And like I said, when it works well, but there are issues where, so X10 works over your power lines. And most people, almost everybody listening would have you have two legs in your power box, and that's how you get your 220 for your dryers and for your stoves. And those two legs run back 110 volts each back to a transformer, probably out in a pole in your backyard or one of those big green boxes that you see in your neighborhood driving around. And so that's how you get 220 at home, and you pull one each of those legs as your hot, and that's how you get 110 volts at your outlet. And then it's all tied back to neutral. So X10 works great for everything that's on the same leg. So if you've got a circuit in your bedroom and a circuit in your kitchen, as long as those are both on, we'll call it the A leg of your power box, works great. Communications works no problem at all. But let's say your bedroom is on the A leg and your kitchen is on the B leg. Well, it may work. It may not, depending on how far away that transformer is from your house. And if you've got a lot of other people on a single on a transformer, or if you've got fewer people on a transformer, that X10 message may actually be able to go out, come across the transformer, come back in, and it may still work. But it may not. It's not going to be reliable for you. And there's all kinds of gadgets that you can buy that you actually put into your electrical panel, or you would put onto a dryer or a stove, that will actually bridge those A and B legs and try and give you that communication across. But it's not really a DIY type project. If you're not comfortable getting into your, you know, electric box and monkeying around with potentially deadly voltages, not something I would really recommend. So that's not one I would highly recommend if you're just starting out. There's one that sort of wants to be the DIY standard, and it's called Zigbee. And I have not really seen a lot of commercial products with the Zigbee standard. I've seen a lot of DIY solder yourself wireless kits and things like that that use Zigbee because it's open source basically. But you really aren't going to be able to run down to the hardware store and buy a Zigbee thing. You can talk a little bit about Z-Wave, Jeff. That's the big one that's probably the most common.
Yeah, so, well, Zigbee, and I will say that most of the lock manufacturers, Kwikset, Yale, support both Zigbee and Z-Wave.
Oh, that's interesting.
So just to throw that out there, mostly I think because the Zigbee's, like you said, it's open source. It doesn't cost them anything.
Right.
Z-Wave is obviously the more common. You can get light switches, you can get locks, you can get garage door opener controllers, you can get what just about anything that you can think of that you would want to automate your home with, you can get with Z-Wave. Light bulbs, you know, just endless things. That appears to be the one that, at least for right now, is winning.
Yeah, and it should be said that Zigbee and Z-Wave are, they don't send the signals over your electrical system in your home. They're actually wireless. They create a mesh network in your home. I know Z-Wave runs on one of the 900 megahertz frequencies. I think Zigbee is somewhere in that 2.4 gigahertz range. So potentially might cause issues with Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. I don't know. I haven't used it, so I couldn't really tell you if that would cause conflicts or not. But they talk to themselves wirelessly and then do things to your electrical outlets or your doors or things like that.
Now, the big downside on really Zigbee or Z-Wave items is just the added expense. It's just absolutely crazy at this point, the prices that they charge for these items. I mean, $40 to $50 for an electrical outlet or a switch. It just, you know, an extra $75 for a front door lock that has that control. It just,
well, $75 bucks on top of what, $150 for the lock itself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're going to spend over $100 on a lock anyway, but if you want one that connects, you're going to spend $200. Yay. Yeah. So, you know, they've got to do something because people are just not going to throw that kind of money down.
No, and there's actually a third big player, which it doesn't seem like they are as well known, but they're Insteon, and they've got a lot of pro-level stuff. They also have home products targeted for the home. They've got a lot of devices, but they suffer from the same problems that, you know, a switch is $35 or $40 or an outlet is $50. Now, it looks like they might be trying to respond to the proliferation of Z-Wave stuff because as I was doing some research for talking about this, I noticed that Insteon now has a starter kit that's $115. It gets you the hub. That's one thing that a lot of these systems, the Z-Wave and the Zigbee, have in common that maybe is a little bit nicer with an X10 because there is no hub. It just – every device has the ability to generate and send signals. But with the Zigbee and with the Z-Wave, you need a hub that, you know, basically bridges that wireless network and then talks to those specific devices. And Insteon is the same. But they have a starter kit. It's $115. It gives you the hub and two dimmable outlets, which – that's not really so bad. I think a lot of the Z-Wave and Zigbee hubs are in the $100 plus price range just to get into the hub itself if you're trying to piece together a system. So for a little bit more, you get a couple of dimmable outlets with it. There's also another one that I've heard of, but I haven't really seen out there called UPB. It's one that you might run into. It's the oldest of the newest systems. It was released in 99. It's the X10 on steroids. It's updated and, you know, the reliability and performance have been improved. X10, I've read, has between a 70 and 80% reliability ratio for when you send a signal out over the network. It's going to work 70 to 80% of the time. And with UPB, it's up over 99% of the time. But the problem is finding those products. There's really not very many manufacturers out there. You know, there's also a lot of neat things that aren't necessarily specifically home automation, like the Philips Hue, which it looks really sexy. But I question whether it's a product that you need or if it's really more of a gimmick. What are your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, I think it's definitely a gimmick. I mean, part of me really wants it bad.
Yeah, I do because, too. But, you know, the starter kit's $188.
That's right, and that's three bulbs in the you know, base unit. And there again, you know, we got to get it. And you know, hopefully, knock on wood, cross your fingers, whatever. Hopefully, we see Apple and or Google make a play where you get one unit that will talk to all of these things. We don't need a base unit for my Hue and a base unit for this and a base unit for that. And I'm hoping that we can get some things to talk a little nicer to each other. But you know, Philips Hue, you know, if you could get an individual bulb for $40, maybe it would be worth it.
That's still kind of a lot. I mean,
yeah, but you know, a bulb, a good LED bulb is going to run you $20.
You say that. I actually got some LED bulbs from IKEA that were really, really nice, and I think I gave less than $7 for them.
Okay, IKEA doesn't count. If you go to Amazon and buy one, or Lowe's and buy one.
But it should, because, I mean, why wouldn't IKEA count? If I can go buy an LED bulb that looks great, that has good color rendering, and, you know, all of that stuff for
$6.95. Well, Hue does a little bit more than that, right? I mean, what Hue does, for people that don't know, it can basically create any color.
Yeah.
And where you get interesting is there are some manufacturers of Blu-rays and other devices like that where when you're playing a movie, it'll set the mood lighting.
Yeah.
To go along with the scene in the movie.
Sci-Fi is actually doing that with a series that's coming up this month or next. And it's escaping me which series it is. It's a television adaptation of a movie. You don't happen to know what it is off the top of your head, do you, Jeff?
I can't remember. The other thing that's really cool about Hue, and I don't know if you know this, but there's a thing, there's an app that you can get for the Hue, and anytime they find a new planet, they render the color automatically to your Hue that would be the color of the sky on that planet.
Yeah, I now that you say that, that rings a bell. I do recall reading that, which is neat, but I don't necessarily want my smart light bulbs to just randomly be changing color. I don't know.
It just flicks them like for a few seconds. It's not like it stays that color or anything. I mean, again, it's just gimmicky, I think, but cool.
It's definitely a fun, nerdy kind of thing. But if I was to have this conversation with my girlfriend and say, honey, we're going to buy this thing. We get three light bulbs. That's $200. But hey, every time scientists find a new planet, it's going to look like what the light on that planet looks like. She would have me committed. That one,
but know. Tell me that you, not the girlfriend factor, but tell me you don't think that's cool because I know you do.
Oh, I've got my credit card halfway out of my wallet. You know, it's interesting that you talk about, you know, something trying to be the hub and could it be Apple or could it be Android? And I'm really curious how they're going to play out since, you know, Apple themselves said that HomeKit is not going to be a hardware solution. It's going to be a platform that these hardware manufacturers can license. But there is a company out there called SmartThings, and they were a Kickstarter. I don't remember how much they raised, but it was one of those Kickstarters that went nuts and raised a significant amount more than they anticipated. And they're trying to be that glue today. Their system speaks Z-Wave and Zigbee. I think the starter kit there is $200. You get the hub, you get a motion sensor, a door open close sensor, and a presence sensor, which is kind of like what you see in an alarm system, one of the IR sensors. And you can script it to do different things, like if the front door opens, then turn all the lights on. If it's after 6 p.m. or, you know, if the front door opens and closes and it's between 6:15 a.m. and 9 a.m., turn all the lights in the house off because it's probably people leaving for work and things like that. I know SmartThings also plays nice with the Hue. It can talk to the Hue hub and you can script activities based on things that SmartThings rules and recipes. And there's an interesting service out there on the internet. If you haven't heard of, you should go check out. It's called If This Then That. And I believe that the website is ifttt.com. Yeah, just if and then a bunch of t's .com or search it on Google. Anyway,
triple T.
It works as a standalone web app kind of thing, and it's neat. You create recipes to do different things. Like every time an episode of your favorite podcast, the No Better Than Average show, comes out, you could have it send you an email. You could have it a neat one I was playing with for a while. Every time my phone pinged that it was at the geolocation around the office, it would put an entry on my Google Calendar and say, I arrived at work and what time? And when I left, it would say, I left work and what time? And so it would show you, oh, I can get an idea of, you know, when I come and go and, you know, for like hours reporting and things like that. And they have all kinds of recipes that tie in with SmartThings and with Hue. So you can have activities that if the stock market goes up 40 points, then I want to change my Hue lights to green. If it goes down, I want them to be red and, you know, things like that. So you're even starting to see that sort of a blur a little bit across the lines of it's not just simply I push a button on a remote control and I open my garage door or, you know, a light comes on or comes off. There's some kind of neat automation stuff that's out there too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of it does tend to have to do with, you know, lighting at this point. But with my system at home, some of the things like when at 7:30 in the morning, if my security system isn't set, I have it text me because my kids have forgotten to set up when they left for school.
Mm-hmm.
When the front door opens, it takes a video so that I can see who's coming or going. We had the Christmas trees plugged into the, outlets that we have control over. And I had it set up where if the system is unarmed, turn the Christmas tree on. And when the system's armed, turn the Christmas tree off. So that during the day, it's turned off, but as soon as someone comes home and disarms the system, it turns the Christmas tree on. So, I mean, there are fun things like that.
Yeah. You know, the one problem and where you do get into problems with what, you know, the wife acceptance factor is, you know, an example that I have is in my last house, I had X10 equipment. And, you know, so I had a lot of the major lights, rigged into the X10. I had outlets for some of the main lamps in the living room, and I actually had some wall switches that were X10 wall switches controlling outside lights and things like that. And it worked great as long as you remembered where you could use a wall switch and where you had to use a remote control and which lamps not to turn off. So unless you were lucky enough to really sit down and plot it out and think, you know, where do I need all of my switches to be smart? Where do I need all of my outlets to be smart? You end up in a situation where you're going to get a phone call one day and it's going to be somebody at the end of the line saying, I don't know how to turn these damn lights on. And if you don't fix it, I will not be here when you get home. And, and so while it is cool that you can do all of those things, it is something that you have to take into account when you're sharing that space with other people. And, I don't know that there's any system out there yet that's really ready for prime time. If you're technical, then no problem. Any of these, I think you'd be, you know, fine with. But, you know, if you've got kids, getting them to remember to use the system instead of, you know, flip the light off at the actual lamp and things like that, that's a problem that I don't know how the manufacturers overcome, because we're so ingrained in how we currently use, you know, lighting and appliances and garage doors and whatnot, that's just going to take time to overcome. And I don't think we're there yet.
I agree. Hey, I just want to let you know, I looked up the Hue lighting for Sci-Fi channel.
Yeah.
Is for the new series called 12 Monkeys.
That's right. I knew it was a movie that I liked, and I couldn't for the life of me think of the TV show. So,
and thank goodness it's also available for Sharknado and Sharknado 2, the second one.
Well, you know, I do want, you know, mood lighting for my Sharknado marathons.
Well, the example it gives is that when there's a thunderstorm and there's lightning, it flashes the lights like there's lightning in your room.
Okay, you know, you laugh at that, but that's actually kind of cool. And for
I think we it's cool.
We didn't really finish the thought. So for the people out there that are going, what are you talking about? So Sci-Fi has got a thing where if you start one of the second screen apps from the Sci-Fi website while this show is going on, it will communicate to your Hue through the hub, and it will try and color coordinate the lighting effects to help enhance the ambiance of what's going on the screen, which, let's face it, that's pretty darn cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I do really like about the automated systems out there, like you were talking about, was, you know, all of the scheduling that you can do. You know, I loved having, you know, certain lights on in the morning when I woke up. I also had put speakers throughout the house and had it hooked into the computer. So, you know, at, 15 or 20 minutes before the alarm was scheduled to go off, it would put on the news from an online radio station and slowly faded up over 10 or 15 minutes. So, you know, you woke up and you had the news playing, and I didn't have to worry about turning off lights when I left the house. It would take care of itself, and depending on the time of the year, it would look up sunrise and sunset times and would control outside lights, and inside lights would be on when you got home. And we're even able now to extend that with some of the like you were talking about, the smart door locks and garage door openers and thermostats and cameras, where you can set the temperature and, you know, you can have the thermostat that knows if nobody's home and dial itself back and whatnot. And so I think the potential for, you know, a connected home is we're right on the cusp. I don't know who that person or that manufacturer is going to be that figures it out and breaks through, but I feel like we're, man, just a few years, 5 years maybe, away from it being so much more commonplace than it is today. What do you think, Jeff?
I think the problem I have, it's the last three CESs, it's going to be next year. It's going to be next year. And this year, they're still saying it's going to be next year.
It's a niche thing. It's expensive.
It is a niche thing. It's too expensive. And unless they can get it to where it's just a lot more affordable than it is now, I just can't see it happening. But, you know, I know Google and Apple are trying to become players in this. I heard that Google, the Nest thermostat now can control your Hue bulbs too. So, I think they're going to make plays at doing this. And for those who don't know, Nest is now owned by Google.
Yep.
So, you know, we're at least a year away, but I'm going to say at least. I'm guessing we're really more realistically 2 or 3 years away. I just think, you know, you talk about like the Apple Watch being a niche product and you can't see a huge adoption rate. I think it's more believable that that personal item is going to be more successful than this, because like you said, there's a high factor of you have to get everyone in the household to buy into whatever system you go with,
yeah,
and know how it works, understand how it works. And right now, I we're still a few years away, I think.
Well, you know, part of it too is the cost factor, especially when you look at trying to justify the cost of, okay, I have a house, I've been in the house for a while, I want to throw some home automation in. Well, you're, you know, a Benjamin at minimum to turn a light on and off. I mean, I suppose there's some ways you can do it cheaper, but you know, realistically, you're in for $100 minimum before you really are doing anything fancy. So, you know, that's a pretty big price to overcome when you start thinking about, oh, how many light switches do you have? And okay, now which of those light switches are two and three way switches? Cause those get complicated and much more expensive than just a standard light switch. And how many outlets? And okay, let's say one outlet in every room is automated. Well, you now you've got five or six rooms and $50 a pop. Maybe the answer is, and I don't know what the market is out there for people who are building, but maybe the answer is, you know, you throw an extra $1,500 or $2,000 on to the cost of construction and do it at the time that you're building it. You know, maybe.
Well, I'll be interested. Do you think we'll, okay, so a lot of the light bulbs, the smart light bulbs are controlled at the light bulb.
Right.
So do you think we'll ever see, instead of wiring the switches, you know, just put smart light bulbs in, have power on them all the time, and then have your switches wherever you want them in the room that are just a, you push the switch, it turns that light bulb on, or that set of light bulbs on.
Well, that's what Insteon is kind of trying to do. Their switches aren't necessarily switches in the traditional sense. You can get those, but a lot of the Insteon switches are actually, they fit a standard light switch, but they're little controller pads that have anywhere from 4 to 8 buttons on them. And in Insteon's world, it's scenes. So you would have a button that's maybe an all lights on scene and an all lights off scene and a living room at 50%. And, you know, they have dim up and dim down. And so not only are all of those available at the switch when you walk up to the wall, which is a very comfortable, you know, paradigm that we're all used to. You walk into a room, you flip the light switch, but they're then also controllable from an app on a smartphone or a tablet. And then the nice thing about that is since your switch is smart too, it doesn't matter if you walked up and flipped the switch at the wall, because you can unflip it from a tablet and or from another switch completely, because now the switch is irrelevant. You know, the real problem is you got to take that switch off of the lamp, because if you flip the power at the lamp, you're sunk, yeah. Whether the bulb has the smarts or whether the outlet has the smarts or whether the switch has the smarts. And that's just learning, you know, just like, you know, I know that I've got a lamp in the bedroom that I never turn on and off at the lamp itself. It's just on the switch. So might as well just weld that sucker in.
Sure. But what I'm thinking is if you're building your house from scratch, you know, not having to wire switches, that saves some money.
Man, that's pretty ballsy to jump in and not wire. And I don't know what the electrical code is. I don't know if you could technically get away with just having wired outlets and no switches. That's an interesting question, and one that, you know, maybe we should find a building contractor who's also tech savvy to come on.
I just, you know, if I were going to build the house, why wire a switch?
Yeah.
Why, you know, why cut through all the studs and run the copper and buy a switch and just wire outlets, and that's where my light's going to go in and I'm going to control it at the bulb.
Huh. Yeah, you know, that's
just a thought.
It's an interesting thought, and I'll let you go first. I suppose then it's the adopter issue of who wants to be the first.
I think you're going
to
be in the market for building a new house long before I am, sir.
I don't know. You know, my girlfriend's kind of getting, you know, the itchy house finger, and has every now and then forwards me an MLS listing and just sent me one today of a real nice house on a golf course, and it's pretty reasonably priced.
That'll come in handy for someone who never golfs.
I know, but it's nice because you're only paying for a third of an acre, but you're getting a whole golf course thrown in.
Act now.
A golf course.
Supplies are limited.
I'm sure if I bought the house, I would never be able to afford to go and play on. There's also a lot of really interesting little things that are coming out. And one that I just stumbled on as I was putting together some of the notes for, you know, this conversation, there's a new little gizmo out called Mother. And it's, I guess, a smart home device, but it's not necessarily a home automation device. And what it is it's this, it's kind of a funny little, it almost looks like a bowling pin with a face on it. So it's a little cute and a little creepy at the same time. Cause it's, you know, it's one of those, it looks almost Japanese. And it's the hub that you plug into your network at home and connects to the internet. And then it comes with, they call them cookies, and they're little, I don't know, they're not very big, maybe the size of a business card and thick enough to put a button cell battery in. And they are reconfigurable sensors. They're motion-controlled sensors, and they're the slick three-axis sensors, so they're super accurate, like what you have in your cell phone or what you have in like a Nintendo Wii, where it can track the motion and it knows if it's accelerating or sitting flat or up or down or whatever. It also has a temperature sensor in it, so it can monitor temperature. And I guess it just takes a few moments to reconfigure one of these cookies to do different things. So it could be a motion detector. You can mount it to a door or a cabinet, and you can have it do things if motion is detected or if the door is open and closed. It can trigger, it can send an email, it can send a text to your phone, it can trigger some other action. You can have them so that if the temperature in an area gets above or below a threshold, run a recipe. You can have it set up so that you put it on your mattress, and if, you know, it'll wake you out of your sleep cycle.
Just to be clear, can the cookie be a cookie? Because I want a cookie.
You know, it's kind of an expensive
cookie talk. I just,
it would be kind of an expensive silicon tasty cookie, but
sorry,
I suppose you could eat it. But you know, it has like you have those apps that you can get for your smartphone that you put in bed, and it senses when you are at the lightest level of sleep, and then it wakes you up. Well, the cookie can do that. And, you know, so there's all kinds of different things that you can do. Like you can turn them into a pedometer and put it in your pocket and track as you walk around. I think you can have 24, cookies tied to a base station. And this is a good part and the bad part. The data lives in the cloud, and, you know, you go out to Mother's website, and it looks like they're giving you just a ton of stats and details, depending on the behavior that you have programmed these cookies to be. And they show things like, you know, you can set up a reward system, and every time your kid brushes his teeth, you know, you've got a cookie on the toothbrush, and it'll record it, and then you can track it. And it seems to be geared around gamifying your entire life. So I don't know how those sort of, you know, ultra connected things are going to fit into this, you know, smart home, revolution that may be coming. It seems like it might be kind of reasonably priced. Right now you can get the hub and four cookies on Amazon for $200. I think if you buy it directly from Sense, which is the company that makes it, they want $299, which that's starting to get pretty salty. The downside is that four packs of cookies, which is the only way you can buy them, are $159. So, yeah, it's, ouch. Again, that they're certainly aiming for a very specific demographic and someone who's got quite a bit of income, disposable income to, you know, pay for this stuff. But I don't quite know who all of those people are. But then every time I see an article that talks about the Philips Hue lights, I see people coming out of the woodwork to comment on it about how awesome their Philips Hues are and that they love them. And I wouldn't have thought that the market for that would be very big.
I really want that for my home theater room. But
yeah, again, it's, you know, $200 buys expensive. A lot of other things that have actual use in a theater room.
Well, that's true.
I mean, that's when you get down to, I have $200.
All those people at Philips that are listening, you should send me something just for testing purposes on a short, long-term basis.
Of course, just for testing purposes. Well, you know, and what's interesting is you can actually kind of simulate what it does for a lot less. You can buy RGB strips of LEDs off of Amazon and eBay for just nothing. And you can get wireless controllers for, you know, 15 or 20 bucks that do all kinds of things. Yeah, you're not going to get something fancy that syncs your TV show to your lights. But, you know, you could get a couple of strips of RGB LEDs, throw them up behind your TV and, you know, have it set to come on to a preset color whenever you turn the TV on. And, you know, right there, you get your little wash on the back of the wall behind the TV and make it look all nice and theatrical. Those are things you can do for short money today. But yeah, I don't know. The Hue, I think, is still, it's one of those that man, I don't know if I'll ever have $200 burning a hole in my pocket, and I've got all of my other little, I sure wish I had taken care of
sure.
to justify me buying that. But I agree
it
with
is
you,
forever,
Jeff.
It is forever on my Amazon wish list.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe I could be like one of those cam girls and show my moobs, and somebody will buy my Philips Hues off my Amazon wish list.
Someone might buy them for you not to show your moobs.
Hey, I'm okay either way as long as I am getting it. Oh, segueing, and this kind of ties in since we've talked a little bit about Amazon and some of the online shippers. Surprise, surprise, free shipping is killing retailers' profits. Shipping isn't free, and the retailers are paying for it in the form of reduced profits. Have you read anything about this, Jeff?
No, actually, I hadn't. This is interesting. I'm not shocked by any stretch of the imagination, but
right. I mean, yeah, nothing is ever free, and you know, I realize that Amazon Prime isn't free, but I know that they don't make money on me, and apparently, you know, Forrester agrees. They say that they're estimating Amazon loses between $1 billion and $2 billion per year on their Prime customers.
Wow.
Yeah, is it really all that shocking? Because, you know, at $79 and now in the new year, it's, I think, $99 for a Prime membership, you know, in addition to getting the video content, which I don't know about you, I use a lot. We watch a lot of Prime video.
Sure, we do too.
You know, I'm not a huge user of Prime Music, but my girlfriend is. She uses that instead of like a Spotify or a Beats or something like that. And, you know, the music catalog's not as good, but it's good enough. And then the shipping benefits, and yeah, we use the heck out of it. And I think nothing of, you know, buying something in the morning, buying something in the afternoon, buying something the next morning, and just, you know, I don't care because it's going to show up in a day and a half or 2 days, and it doesn't bother me that Amazon's losing their shirt.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm the same way. I can't imagine not being a Prime member, and I'll do the same thing. I need this. Oh, I need that. Oh, I need this. It's
yeah.
like I get three boxes on the same day. They gotta hate me a lot.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because now that we have that huge Amazon DC here, I've noticed that, you know, 2 years ago where I would have gotten three boxes in one day, now I'm getting one box. Or maybe two, because they're putting those products in, and you know, gosh, they are really analyzing my purchasing patterns, and almost everything I buy now comes out of, you know, either the local DC or, you know, one just south of us in Kentucky, and they're consolidating, which they got to do in order to make money on it.
Interestingly enough, I get most of my stuff from the Kentucky one.
Well, yeah, you're a little south of the city. You know, probably split the difference, right?
Yep.
But, you know, it's interesting, you know, the customers have become used to free shipping. And, you know, over the holiday season, everybody was doing free shipping.
Absolutely.
I mean, even if you're not a Prime customer on a lot of Amazon products, you get free shipping on orders over $35 now, which they snuck that one in.
Walmart was doing like free shipping if you spend over $50 or something.
No, because I actually, I'm not a huge fan of shopping at Walmart, but I did Christmas shopping this year at walmart.com because they had the things I was looking for, and they had the prices that, you know, that were better than everybody else. And I, you know, I guess I got suckered into that game, you know, just like the best of us. And I made several small purchases that, were well under $50, and it was all shipped free to the store. And I didn't ship it to my house, but when I went to pick it up in the store, it was like from a Walmart DC in a UPS or a FedEx box that was shipped into the store. And you go pick it up just like you're going to a FedEx pickup or something like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Target was doing free shipping. You know, so customers have just pretty much come down to free shipping. That's the thing. I know, you know, places like Overstock routinely do free shipping and like 99 cent shipping and things like that. But ComScore did an analysis of online purchases and showed that this year 68% of online purchases made in the third quarter were free shipping, and they're expecting that number to be even higher because of the holiday season. The thing that blew my mind is that's up from 44% the year before. So everybody is going to free shipping is what it looks like. You know, how does the small guy and, you know, the medium sized retailer compete with that? Because, you know, Amazon's still charging lower prices than I find at a lot of brick and mortar stores, and I don't have to put pants on to get it. You know, how does the small guy compete?
Well, yeah, I don't think they can. They have to compete on service, right? And right now, they certainly, you know, there aren't a lot of places out there that do that.
Well, can they compete on service if it's just a thing that I know I want? You know, show me another online retailer that does it better than Amazon. I mean, the great thing about Amazon is I never have to deal with them for the most part. So that's the ultimate in service.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, it shows up.
I'm just thinking, you know, if you're looking at boutique type places, they can woo people with other things. But for just, you know, I need some coffee or,
yeah,
you know, I want a, you know, pair of headphones. I don't know. I don't see how anyone's going to beat them.
No. And, you know, and because of the free shipping, you know, my default, I check Amazon first. And then if what I want isn't for sale there, I think long and hard about how I'm going to acquire that. Do I go out and buy it, or do I risk buying from a site that maybe has it that I've never used before? And I don't know how their, you know, e-commerce is compared to the gold standard. And I don't know. If I owned a, you know, a smaller online, you know, retail establishment, I would definitely be terrified of, you know, not just the Amazons, but now the Amazons and the Walmarts and the Targets that are following suit.
Absolutely. Well, there's a couple other things that are kind of topical,
yeah,
history, you know, or history are topical for current events that we probably ought to hit before we go on to some of these other topics.
All right, let's do it.
Banners at CES hinted a new Sony Walkman / phone device.
Yeah, and that was – okay, so this is interesting, and this is how fast news changes this time of year, because I just put those notes out there yesterday afternoon. We are recording this Monday evening, and it's been announced today, and I actually have it on my phone here. I just saw it like literally 15 minutes before we were coming in to record. This is how fast things change. The new Sony Walkman, it is not a Walkman / phone device. It is a Walkman, which kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit. In 2015, who's going to carry around a dedicated digital audio player? But Sony just announced the new Walkman ZX2, and they are pushing for the high fidelity market. I don't know that the official specs have been released, but they're saying that if it goes along with the lines of last year's Walkman A17, which was a high fidelity Walkman device, that it'll have support for 24-bit, 192 kilohertz audio files. So you get that.
So they're going against like the Pogo player?
Yeah, that super high bit rate, high sample rate, super uncompressed, you know, audio file. So this is the thing that blows me away that was just announced this afternoon. You care to take a guess on price? Now, last year's A17 was
$299. I'm going to go with $349.
$1,000, Alex.
What?
Yes. The new ZX2 is going to launch this spring for over $1,000.
What in the hell?
Sony wants to go out of business.
Like, you could pay $1,000 and Taylor Swift will follow you and sing in her ear.
Yes, $1,000. That's the part that just smacked me silly. And it is a smart device in that it is running Android. But
no,
so,
it's not smart. Well, it's $1,000.
Okay.
Are you kidding me?
The marketing is not smart. The device is smart. You don't blame the device. Won't somebody think of a poor device? It's not its fault that its parents are monsters.
Jesus.
Yes. So here's the thing. It's got a screen on it. It's a touchscreen. It's running Android. It's, you know, it is now January of 2015. We're in the future. It's running Android 4.2.
Well, you know.
It's running Jelly Bean.
Why would you want something, you know, new and current when you're paying $1,000, Jacob? I cannot.
Okay,
just
so
stop.
Wait.
Okay,
but
okay. No.
This is the absolute best part of the article I read. So it supports DSD, which I've never heard of. It's fancy audio format that is better than me. It supports Wave, AIFF, FLAC, Apple Lossless, and Bluetooth wireless streaming. Yes, it does. It supports Bluetooth wireless streaming, so you can Bluetooth stream your 192 kilohertz, 24-bit sampled, super lossless audio files. I don't even know what Bluetooth's audio streaming is as far as the bit rate, but it is.
Not,
why on earth would you do that?
You wouldn't. That's ridiculous. Oh, my gosh. Jacob.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And,
well, I'm a little sorry that I even brought it up now. Seriously, $1,000.
I mean, it's kind of schadenfreude to watch what Sony is going through. How on earth do they think that this is going to survive in the market? Because it's not even a phone. I could maybe understand it if it had a phone and I had a super high fidelity Walkman and a phone.
Maybe.
But it's not. It's a dedicated audio device.
Is it like 8 terabytes or something?
I guess the point in their favor is it comes standard with 128 gigabytes and you can put a memory card in it. I don't remember which format, probably
Sony memory stick.
No, I think that's been dead for a while. It's the SX.
They're bringing it back, baby.
The SDHX or, the little, memory card, SD memory card. And I think you can put up to another 128 gigabytes in it. But, geez, $1,000. And, the thing I wonder about is, and I don't know if there's been any mention of a Sony audio store to buy this lossless audio. There may be, since that seems to be Sony's push. I don't have that information on hand. And I know Pogo is going to have a store for the lossless audio, but I don't know if that's in a format that's specific to Pogo or if it's, if it's a FLAC or an AUG or something like that, that you can play on anything that supports it. I don't know where you go to get content for it. I don't know. Are there enough people willing to invest in an entirely new ecosystem for high fidelity audio?
Well, there are probably people out there that are. I don't know that those people are going to spend. Because the Pogo player's what, $300 maybe?
I thought it was $450, but half the price.
Yeah, I.
And it's backed by Neil Young. Who do you want to back your audio device, Neil Young or Sony? I'm going to go with Neil Young every time.
Well, yeah. Well, let's segue out of that into another Sony story.
Oh, poor Sony.
I just wanted to do a follow-up. I think we talked about the interview.
Yes.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I kind of wanted to follow up a little bit on that. It's been reported, Forbes reported that the opening weekend had a $2.8 million box office, which on a $44 million budget, that kind of not good. Now,
but it was only shown to that, in how many theaters?
Yeah, not very many theaters. The but to that is that there was a $15 million, what they called digital box office. So all the places that they released it online, they ended up making the most they've ever made over a weekend on online content at $15 million. So you're talking about around $18 million.
Is that – okay, so I don't follow Hollywood box office. Is $18 million against $44 million budget, is that decent for an opening weekend?
No. So usually you're wanting to make up at least half of your budget, at least.
They're almost there.
But, to give you some idea, Annie, Annie made $16.5 million over the same weekend.
Against, know what its budget was?
I do not. Into the Woods made $31 million. Okay. I believe its budget was around $75 million. So,
that's
a
halfway mark.
Yeah. So, it wasn't a horrible weekend for them. I'm sure it wasn't anything what they had hoped to get if it had released at 2,000 theaters,
right,
like they had planned. But it's interesting to think if you could make $15 million releasing something digitally, how much longer until we start seeing theaters taking movies that they think, this may be a swing and a miss, so we're going to release this digitally?
I think there's a strong argument for that. The problem is, still getting those, I'm going to say, A-list stars just based on what Seth Rogen and James Franco were paid. I don't know if they truly are A-list stars, but I think I read that Seth Rogen made almost $9 million and James Franco was paid $6.5 million. So
that's interesting. Seth Rogen more than James Franco.
Because Seth Rogen, he writes and produces and he's had some misses, but he's had some pretty, he's been a pretty reliable moneymaker for Hollywood. you know, yeah, but I mean, you've got to find films that you can make for digital distribution, you know, $10 million, $5 million, $12 million. I mean, those lower budget, I think that's a formula that's got to have Hollywood a little nervous, but then there's so much content that's out there already. Are you willing to spend, you know, $8 or $10 for a, you know, a not in the theaters first release, or, you know, wait a couple months and it's, you know, $2.99 or $3.99? I don't know. I'm patient enough at this point in my life that I can wait until it comes to a standard VOD price. And I'm also smart enough to know that some films, you know, like Interstellar or Gravity, you know, you go see those and you pay the $15 for 3D IMAX and all of that, because, you know, it makes a difference when you see those on the big screen. I don't feel like The Interview is going to make a difference if you see it on the big screen or not.
No. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that the difference would be don't see it. That would make a difference.
Well, I know it had really high Rotten Tomatoes scores and whatnot pre-release. And, you know, everybody was saying, well, of course, that's the want-to-see-it effect, since Sony said you couldn't see it, we're not going to show it. I haven't followed it since then. What's it – do you happen to know what's it doing on, like, Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes? Is the movie itself any good?
I don't know, but I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to go out on a limb and go, no. But, talks amongst yourselves, people. I'll look this up.
You know, we like to say that we're prepared, but we're not prepared.
We are never prepared. Are you kidding me?
Oh, sadly, Taken 3 is only getting a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. He has a unique set of skills, and making a trequel apparently isn't one of them.
Okay, I'm not seeing it on.
Oh, that can't be good. Yeah, it's nowhere to be seen. Big Hero 6 is pulling in a solid 89. I agree with that.
Selma's pulling in 100%, bud.
Don't even know what that movie is.
Oh, it looks good.
Apparently an unsophisticated oaf. What is Selma?
It's a drama.
Well, not all the dramas always get 100%.
Yes, it's not something you can explain.
Am I going to cry? 100%. All right. The interview, 53%. So, yeah. That's kind of on the bubble. I've seen movies down in that, you know, 50-ish percent range that weren't terrible.
Yeah.
For me, personally, and apparently I have that Simon Cowell, you know, I don't know when I'm watching crap. If I enjoy it, I enjoy it. For me, Rotten Tomatoes, about 60%. If 60% or above, so I'm probably not going to hate it.
Selma's the one about Martin Luther King Jr.
That's probably – that's going to win an Oscar right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Annie, 27%. Oof. Although the critics are giving it – wait. The critics are giving it a 27%. The folks like it, 63%.
Of course they do.
You know, you say that. Jamie Foxx is a talented actor. He's one of those that I'll watch anything that he's in and give him the benefit of the doubt. He's done some good stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, anyway.
Heck of a little divergence there. But,
yeah, you know, sorry.
So I think that this is interesting, and something that had just come up, not to veer too far off of, you know, Sony and the interview, but interesting from a geopolitical standpoint. On January 2nd, Obama signed an executive order authorizing sanctions against North Korea for the hacking attacks. But it seems like from what I'm reading, more and more security experts are coming out saying, we don't know that you can say it was definitely North Korea. They seem to be pointing to an inside job, and nobody knows for sure whether it was a briefcase full of North Korean money that got that inside person working, or if it was a disgruntled employee. But we're now sanctioning a country over it.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a country that we've already been sanctioning. So we're like double sanction. Extra sanctions.
Maybe we just have to have, like, we took sanctions away from Cuba. They got to go somewhere, you know?
It's not a zero-sum game. These sanctions don't just go away, people.
That's right.
Sending them back. Yeah, that's interesting. But so I know there's your little political insight for the week. what else do we have on our list? I'm looking down at my timer and I see we're at 50 some odd minutes. Where does the time go?
I know. Should we wrap it up?
You want to, I don't know. You want to talk about the robot exoskeletons? That's a quick little one.
Yeah, we can do that real quick. So, Cyberdyne Tech.
And this is the only reason I want to talk about this. Cyberdyne? Really? Really? Cyberdyne.
Awesome, man.
A real company is named Cyberdyne.
And it's a robot that's going to crush your head. Anyway, so Cyberdyne Tech has requested FDA approval for release of a augmented lifting device.
It looks like someone took a Thighmaster and strapped it to your lower back.
Yeah, but they said that they're saying that it's going to enable people to lift up to 200 pounds.
That's what they said. Now, I watched the video, and I didn't see anybody lifting more than 60 kilograms.
Well, yeah, it, you know, who knows? It's not a product yet. I mean, not a viable product yet. So we'll see. But I think it's interesting that, you know, with the aging population, and that population has the most disposable income, I mean, this could be a big deal.
Well, it could be huge in healthcare too, because, you know, a good example, I have, some relatives who have some pretty significant health problems, and a cousin who has been, you know, a primary caregiver for some years now. And, you know, she's not physically strong enough to help, you know, do the lifting and the maneuvering and the moving that they now need, you know, because she's just not strong enough. But, you know, maybe with a 150-pound or a 200-pound assist, she would be. And I could see that, you know, nursing homes and hospitals that cater to, you know, people who have mobility issues or maybe elderly people could really benefit from something like this. I don't know. I mean, I watched the videos that they have online, and, you know, the only thing that looked odd to me is they showed horrible lifting form. Literally everyone walked up to these 30-kilogram boxes and just bent right at the waist and grabbed them and picked them up. And you could hear the whir of the servos, but it still made my back ache a little bit watching that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the whole point, though, is that you're not really, you know, lifting like that, right?
I mean, suppose, but then do people forget that they've got their, you know, Cyberdyne T1000 brace on and, you know, go to pick something up and throw their back out? There's something to be said for, you know, learning to use your legs. Sure. And really, Cyberdyne, I can't believe that there's actually a company called Cyberdyne. It's the best part of the story for me, frankly.
I think it's cool. And I think that some of the headway that they're making, I mean, how much longer until we see, you know, paraplegics walking? And I'm excited. I think that some of the robot exoskeleton technology that we're seeing is going to be a huge game changer. And
absolutely,
that's the kind of tech that I really like to see. I mean, it looks like it's going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, I just hope James Cameron owns one share of their stock. That's all I want, him to own one share.
That's possible.
I hope he does. I hope that's the world we live in. Okay, 50-some, almost 58 minutes. Jeff, what do you love?
Okay, let's wrap this thing up. I love the BOHM, B-O with the little dotties. H-M is the manufacturer.
Oh, umlauts?
Yeah, umlauts. B-O umlaut H-M.
BOHM.
Yeah, it's called the SoundBlock Ultra Portable Wireless Bluetooth Speaker.
Well, that's a mouthful.
It kind of is, but it is an awesome device. It is a cube that is, let's see, 3 inches by...
It has to be 3 inches by 3 inches or it's not a cube.
2 inches by 6 inches? No, it's not a cube.
Someone Warning. Failed geometry.
Yes. But it's 6 by 2 by 2.
Okay.
And it is...
An extrusion of sound?
It is really nice. It is pretty amazing. It has, right on the little speaker, it's Bluetooth.
Okay.
It has, you know, it's rechargeable. It lasts about 10 hours.
Wow. That's not bad at all.
Of playback. It has, you know, play and pause, previous track, next track, volume up and down right on the speaker. And it also has a talk button that will work with Siri or to answer the phone.
Okay. So it's got a speakerphone capability?
Yeah.
Cool.
And it is $50 on Amazon, and it is worth more than $50. It is a great, great little device, and it works about 40 feet away. So wow. We have it sitting in the kitchen, and we can, set our phone down, hit play, and walk around, have no problems. It works like a champ. I highly, highly, highly recommend, if you're in the market for a Bluetooth speaker and you don't want to spend the, Boku bucks that you spend if you go with, Beats or some of the other little portable speakers that they charge a bajillion dollars for, check this one out. It is a great, great little device.
How's the sound quality? Like, how's bass response? And
it's amazing. The bass is really good. I mean, I'm serious. It is really, really nice. I'm kind of an audiophile. Obviously it's not, it's a 6x2x2 cube, but
says the audiophile.
Yeah. But for what it is, it sounds really good. So we were using it to play Christmas music.
Yeah.
We're out cooking, and it's really nice.
So you've got a pretty open level first floor. Like, can you hear it if it's in the kitchen? Can you hear it the living room or around the downstairs?
Absolutely. You can hear it from quite a distance away.
That's really slick. I've been very tempted by those Bluetooth speakers, but part of me really wants to save my pennies and invest in the Sonos, but they're just so expensive compared to some of those Bluetooth speakers.
But you would be amazed. This is a really, really nice device. I'm telling you, if you go to Amazon and you check it out, you'll see. I mean, the reviews, that has 830 reviews and it's got 4.6 stars.
Wow, that's pretty telling.
It's a nice device.
Huh. And it only does Bluetooth. It doesn't do AirPlay, right?
It does not do AirPlay. It does have a jack on the back that you could, in theory, plug something into if you wanted to.
Now, can you plug it into the wall and just keep it permanently plugged in, or is it battery only?
No, you can plug it into the wall and it'll work. It's a normal USB on the back.
Okay.
And you can leave it plugged in and it'll work, forever.
That's pretty slick. I would love something like that in the kitchen, like when we're doing dishes and things like that. Huh. I might have to get my credit card back out. I'll put a link in the show notes if anybody is interested in checking it out. That sounds really cool.
I'm telling you that it is worth the money. It's awesome. It's a great device.
Well, very cool. Okay. So I actually have two, and I was going to say neither one of mine are things, but I suppose one of them technically is a thing. Technically, I suppose both of them are things, but only one is a thing that you can go buy. The other one is free. How good is it? How good of a tip is that? So the first one, this is the one I actually had prepared, it's a book. It's called Sand, and it's by the author Hugh Howey. He is, I believe he might be picked up by a label now, but he was an independent writer, kind of like, the Martian guy, Weir. Andy Weir was, who he just loved writing and wrote fiction and got to the point where he was doing that for himself. He has written a series. It's called the Silo series. And there are, I believe, three books. It's Wool,
Shift
and Dust, I think.
Dust is the last one. Yeah.
And okay. So if you like dystopian, sci-fi, highly, highly recommend that you go check those out. And he's got, I don't know if it's a new one or if it was written before or after, but I just read it. It's called Sand. And it's, again, post-apocalyptic. It's a short little book. It's a quick read. It's only like 250 pages. It's a really enjoyable read. It's really super easy to read. You can get it on Amazon. I think it's $6. And if you actually have a physical Kindle, you can check it out in the Kindle Borrowers Library for free. You could probably also find it at your library. You can read it in, 5 hours maybe. It's a quick read. It's a page turner. The whole premise is we are set at some future date where the world as the characters know it has basically been encumbered with sand. And, you know, it's life is a struggle, and it's kind of water world if it was not water but sand. And there are these sand divers. There is a technology that they have invented that they put a suit on and can control the flow of the sand grains around them and dive into the sand, and they go and collect artifacts from the past and whatnot. Really a great little book. My only complaints is that the backstory is a little thin as to how the world got this way. But I could totally see him expanding this into, you know, another book or two that explain the backstory and explain what happens in the, after the main book ends. Thoroughly enjoyable. If you like those little dystopian quick sci-fi reads, highly recommend you go check it out. Sand by Hugh Howey, and that's Howey. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. The other one is something that I had no intention of talking about, and then I got completely suckered into it. And here's the thing. If you're a fan of This American Life, go check it out. If you're not a fan of This American Life, shame on you. Become a fan. Go check it out. And if you've never heard of it, double shame on you. Go to thisamericanlife.org and check them out. They're all amazing. But I was just reading a list of podcasts, and somebody had asked the question of what's the best podcast episode you've ever seen. And someone else had thrown this out. It's a two-parter from This American Life. It dates back to February of 2013. So you got to go on their website and get it. I'll put links in the notes. But it is a two-part series that they did a couple years ago where they followed a high school on the south side of Chicago around for 5 months, I believe. And it's the story of, I believe, over a one or a two school year period, there were 8 murders by gunfire and 26 kids wounded by getting shot because of gang activity. And it's just an amazingly powerful two-part story. It's called Harper High School. So it's This American Life, Harper High School. And oh my gosh, I mean, you want to talk about being thankful for your life and how you live. I mean, the story of these kids that live in this inner city neighborhood and go to the school, it's just, it's heartbreaking. And you wonder how people can grow up thinking it's okay to live like that. And these, you know, teachers and counselors who, you know, genuinely want to try and help these kids break this cycle that they're in, where, you know, they talk about literally the fact that everyone in the neighborhood is in a gang. And it's not even the case of that you choose to join a gang. It's that whatever gang controls your street, de facto, you are in that gang. And if kids from another street catch you, you're just as likely to get shot as the guys who actually are participating in that gang activity, because as far as they're concerned, you're part of the gang. And that's how these kids grow up and how they live. And it's just, it's amazing. I highly recommend checking it out. So that's my little bit more depressing what I love, but highly recommend.
Thanks
it.
For, you know, finishing on that note.
I know. And, and you know, I'm promoting another $1,000, podcast.
$1,000.
I know. That's I can't imagine that either, but you know, anyway, be thankful, folks, for what you have, because you've got it a heck of a lot better than some people. That's all I can say. Jeff, I think we have talked more than anybody deserves to hear us talk. So do you want to take us home and wrap it up?
Yeah. So if you enjoyed the podcast, please go out and give us a rating on iTunes. That is still the best way to help us out. And, you know, give us a review, a rating. Please, please, please send us any feedback to feedback@nobettershow.com. You can get us on Twitter @nobettershow, at Jeff Chaney.
You can follow me on Twitter @NotTheRealJacob.
And I think I'm on Facebook as well. You can look me up there. We have a Facebook page for the No Better Show. Check that out. And, you know, we really appreciate you guys listening. We're having a really good time doing this, and we hope you're enjoying it as much as we are.
Yeah, and don't forget our call-in line. If you've got a question, a comment, or a rant, 317-643-1212. Don't even have to talk to us. Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Yeah, I know that makes my life better. Can I just call into that and talk about OBS so I don't have to talk to you? Is that doable?
You know what? I'm going to insist on it from now on. You record your part of the show. I'll record my part of the show, and we'll just smoosh them together somehow going forward.
This is going to be gold. Gold, I tell you.
Thanks everybody for listening. We will see you next week. Have a great week.